Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Mr. Cole Hornaday.
Wait, Ben Lawrence.
Ms. Nicole Lynn.
Hello.
And, of course, Chris Casso.
Hi.
I don't know why I felt like screaming everybody's
name.
We're
just all howling happy here tonight.
Speaking of howling and happy, Emerald City Comic Con is this weekend, friends. And Chris, you don't get to go because you have to man the store.
And yes. He's so happy.
I don't get to go either because I didn't buy tickets.
And I'm happy because I love working the con.
We got to make movies. We got to make movies.
We do have to make movies. Yeah. We're going to make Chris stay late on a day he's probably going to be staying, getting up early for. Thank you so much, Chris.
Okay.
We appreciate it. One thing, my friend Paul Goody actually wanted me to go to the con because his favorite actor, Vincent D'Onofrio, is going to be there. Speaking on a panel, I guess, I don't know what for, probably to be
Daredevil.
And he wanted me to get Vincent D'Onofrio's autograph. And you're not going, but if you see Vincent D'Onofrio, can you get him an autograph?
Honey, no, I'm going to be working.
You
have to wait in line for hours to do that.
If he comes by the Comic Stunton booth.
And you know,
if he comes by, I'll snap a picture with him.
All right. Good enough.
You know, buddy Jesus it.
The days of handing a celebrity your autograph book and saying, hey, Mr. D'Onofrio, well, sure, son. Yeah. You know, those days are long.
No, they're charging like $50.
Right. Plus, you got to take a number and stand in line and wait for an hour and a half, you know, because this, I think that that Hollywood actors now actually calculate their earnings from conventions as part of their you know their annual income
because they have garbage bags full of cash.
Right. I mean,
I would like to believe that I would not change my now feeling, but I am of the opinion right now. This is 2017 me that if I were a big movie star who went to cons, I wouldn't charge for my autograph. That just seems cruel, and you know, if you don't need the money, why are you doing it?
Well, it's your time, though, and your time is money, Ben. Right. Your time is money.
Well, I have to agree with Nicole. Also, you've never spent more than maybe an hour or so in a convention.
Oh God, you want
to talk to Chris and Nicole about being there for hours and hours and hours against that press of humanity. You want your time to be paid for.
I did stand in line pretty much almost all day to meet Bruce Springsteen once.
Oh, and that's true. That's
I actually felt really bad for the guy, but he was making bank because I didn't pay. My friend paid, and he got like a plus one. So I got to meet Bruce Springsteen for free. But the dude was just stood there.
Glazed.
Man, fan after fan after fan after fan. It seemed like a horrible. Okay, I take that back. Maybe we'll charge. Maybe. Just because it's a horrible thing.
You could compromise and 50-50 it, and some of it goes to charity.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you could lower your price. You could be on the humble side because who plays Coulson? I always get it wrong. It's like Greg Clark or Clark Gregg because he has like two first names.
Yeah.
He was like the most expensive for like a con one year, I think, and it was just like. I mean, you're Agent Coulson, and we love you, but good Lord, man.
Are you giving that money to the ACLU?
You send your kid to Harvard? What?
Yeah.
I'm why wait till you're famous? I'm going to charge for my autograph beginning now.
Okay.
That will make you famous.
All, all the money is going to a good cause, my rent.
Yes.
Okay. Which just keeps skyrocketing because I live in the city. Okay. Yes. Something else I wanted to, enough about me. Something else that I want to talk about at Emerald City is the original founders from Image are going to be there. And if you want to meet the gang.
Except for Jim Lee.
Except for
Jim
Lee.
Because he's a rock star.
So they're gonna speak at a panel on Friday, March 3rd from 1 to 2:30 p.m.
Yep.
Moderated by Robert Kirkman. We all know who that is. And afterwards, there's gonna be a merchandise signing at the Grand Ballroom at the Sheraton Hotel, which is just down the street from the convention center.
But
and yes.
There are some fine details about that, though.
Lay it on me.
So to go to that thing after the panel event, you do have to enter yourself into a lottery, and they will only pick 300 people, and you need to have either a Friday badge or a four-day badge. And so if you want to participate in that, I recommend going to the Emerald City Comic Con website, searching Image Founders, and you'll find both of the things. You'll find the panel, which is going to be main stage WSCC4A, and then you will also find the lottery, and there's a big button that you can click on to register for it, because you can't automatically just get put into it by having a badge. You have to physically register yourself. So, so just key things that if you want to participate in it, don't wait.
Good, good info.
I wonder if anybody's ever had Rob Liefeld sign a pair of jeans.
Oh my God!
Buttonfly?
Yeah.
Oh, we can only hope.
What's behind that?
Because he did a commercial with Spike Lee.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And he was like 12 in the commercial.
I just wonder if somebody's ever taken that.
He was like 12 when they started Image Comics.
Yeah. Oh boy.
He still looks like 12.
So
he does. He does. He really does.
Anything else to say about Emerald City before it happens this weekend?
Visit our booth if you get the chance. We are going to have a ton of trade paperbacks, back issues, art, stuff, cats. Things like
not
that.
Stuffed cats though. No. We'll have a cat, and we will have really cool stuff. We're bringing a lot of great material. Come to our booth if you want to check out something new. Ask for recommendations. We'll be happy to help. And we'll be having a ton of back issues and variants and all different types of things. I'm beginning to think that
Scott turned this into a nonprofit just so he can legally have his kids volunteer to haul all that stuff to the convention center.
He's been doing that forever. But there's also about 1 trillion panels happening this year. And there's also an amazing artists gallery. So as usual, I always recommend going to, why are you?
Sorry.
Cole's laughing.
I made the mistake of looking at my phone. It's all right. I laughed at something. I'm listening.
just to give you an idea, there's going to be like a panel for Joss Whedon. There's one for Stranger Things, like play games with Barb or something weird. There's like Twitch live streams. There's cosplay stuff. There's like a Supernatural fan panel. There's like something for Kaiju Max. I think Xander Cannon is just going to be talking about it. Shannon Waters is going to be talking about Lumberjanes. Pretty much anything, you know. There's a Black Heroes Matter one, How to Draw with Katie Cook, which is adorable. I kind of want to go to that because I love Katie
Cook.
She
drew the cats on all the Valiant Borders, I think.
You think so?
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe.
There's Diversity in Publishing, 3rd Annual Spooky Panel with the guy who writes Courtney Crumrin, and as well as a million other people. Anyway, there's just tons and tons of stuff. Oh, one last thing. Sex Education, Erotica, and Comics, a discussion by Limerous Press, and they're the ones who came out with the Ojoy sex toy stuff.
Okay.
And they're an off-branch of Oni Press. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting for me, knowing who I am listening to this podcast. But I also think it's pretty cool that they're probably going to be coming out with a line of different stuff, too. So, so they're just go and search their site for about 1 trillion things you can do in a very small amount of time.
Awesome. Yeah. And if you do make it to the con and you make it to the Comics Dungeon booth, tell Nicole that you listen to the podcast.
I know who you are. What are you talking about?
You won't get anything special. Maybe a smile and a thank you from Nicole. But
that's all you need from her.
Exactly. But let us know.
You'll probably get an overwhelming amount of joy. Just like, oh my God, you actually listen. Thank you.
Let us know that you listen, and it'll be a lot of fun. All right. So that's Emerald City. That's this weekend. If you don't have tickets, then you're kind of out of luck. Let's move on and let's talk about the first superhero. Chris, this was a topic that you suggested. Take it away.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where it came up. A friend of mine pinged me, and when a couple weeks back, a lot of people lost power in Seattle due to snow and other things, and so he was being asked who was the first superhero, and he pinged me, and I started looking it up. So I will say that discussion, and I'm not going to try and make this a big discussion, but it does require to know what your range of qualifiers are, because generally people will say Superman, and which works pretty well if you qualify the question as somebody that is superhuman with powers wearing tights in comic books. Once you slowly remove those qualifiers, then you can get some interesting stuff past that, because even among DC Comics, the first... according to Overstreet Comic Book Price Guide, the first masked hero to appear in American comic books is someone known as the Clock, who predates Superman by 1936. Superman is 1938. Mm-hmm. Before the Clock, there's Dr. Occult. The Clock has no powers. He's just a schmuck in a suit. Dr. Occult has magic powers, but does magic count as superpowers? So, but you can go even before Dr. Occult. And I mean, you could go back as far as 1911 to John Carter of Mars. But he's just a guy who went to another planet and has different gravity. Zorro, 1919, but he's just a vigilante. The Shadow in Radio in 1930, but that's if you don't count radio as, you know, part of the qualifiers. But one of the more interesting ones for me was in 1931, Takeo Nagamatsu created a Japanese superhero by the name of Ogenbat, or the Golden Bat. And it was featured in Kamishibai paper theater. And he's considered to be the first superhero with a skull-shaped head, wears green and white costume with a high-collared red cape, carries a rapier, and he lives in a fortress in the Japanese Alps, and he has superhuman strength, invulnerability, and the ability to fly. So paper theater was basically like a one-panel, like kind of a newspaper thing, and they would take it to town and narrate a story of different panels. So it's like, that's pretty close to sequential narrative, which is
a living comic book.
A living comic book.
Yeah.
So by that standard, if you're still being picky about stuff, Golden Bat kind of predates Superman a bit.
Yeah. That's so cool.
Yeah, and then like most of these characters were influenced by Buck Rogers or Doc Savage or the Lone Ranger and all that. And those are from like the 30s. You could say Superman, you wouldn't be wrong, but if you open up your qualifiers, there's much more interesting history.
Fascinating.
Yeah. It really begs the question, when do you start looking?
Yeah.
You know, looking at pulps, looking at radio. When I saw the question on our show discussion list, the first or the source material for superhero stories for me, from my perspective, was a book by Philip Wiley called Gladiator, written in 1930, and it predated Superman by, of course, 8 years. And this story is very familiar. It's about a scientist father who invents an alkaline-free radical serum to, quote-unquote, improve humankind by granting the proportionate strength of an ant and the leaping ability of a grasshopper. What he does is he injects his pregnant wife with the serum, and Hugo Danner is born with superhuman strength, speed, bulletproof skin. So it's kind of like the super soldier formula. It's Alan Moore, I think, borrowed from these ideas very liberally when he did Tom Strong for his ABC comics, but Tom Strong was really just a wink back to the pulps anyway. And supposedly, when you look at the mythology of the creation of the Superman character, this novel is widely assumed to have been an inspiration for Superman, and they reference it a lot in Superman history books, but there's no real documentation that Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster were actually influenced by the book. Mm-hmm. I read it. It's incredibly sexist. No, I'm sorry. It's viciously misogynist.
No.
1930, you say.
Let's be clear.
1930, yeah. It's Surprise. Brutal that way. And he is the Ubermensch. Hugo Danner is not a very nice person. In fact, he comes to a bad end, in a live volcano at the end. There have been many attempts to sort of incorporate him into comics. Marvel included a Gladiator story in Marvel Comics Preview number 9, which is the magazine, type of thing that they, attempted. The one that I remember that in Young All-Stars, the character in DC's Young All-Stars, which are like the World War II progeny, mm-hmm. There's the Iron Monroe is supposedly the son of Hugo Danner. And also in 2005, Howie Chaykin and Russ Heath adapted the novel for a limited series called Legend, where they updated it. And it just did not translate well. In fact, it was kind of miserable to read.
Yeah.
I didn't care for it at all.
I had a hard time with that one.
Yeah. So if you want to start, looking, paging through history and considering where these ideas came from that we lean so heavily on now, I would recommend the book. Just bear in mind, it's kind of ugly and it's really, really dated.
I have a question for y'all, and maybe this is answered in lore, maybe not. Maybe it's just a thought experiment. If Superman had originally been called Awesome Man, would we be talking about awesome heroes at this point? Are superheroes named after Superman?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because Superman set the tone for all that stuff, for the whole literary movement.
All right, well, think on that. We don't have to take up our time.
That just makes me think of stuff like the TV show Fringe had, when they went to an alternate reality, there were alternate reality comics,
yeah.
and things were slightly differently named, and everybody's like, what, that's normal. Yeah, yeah. What's a Batman? So it's like, yeah, it could have just been a pickup like that, as simple as just kind of like, why would you say super? That sounds weird.
Yeah. More than. Mm-hmm. More human than human. Mm-hmm.
All right. Little Rob Zombie there for you, fans.
That's White Zombie, okay? Before he broke off and did a solo stuff.
Gotcha. Yes, of course. I forgot about the band name.
Yeah.
So
pick much?
I actually find it surprising that one of the conditions of being a superhero was wearing tights.
If you're being particular, because the thing is, like, the clock that guy mentioned, mm-hmm. he's just wearing a tuxedo with, like, a little piece of fabric over his face, and he hands out a business card saying, like, your time is up. And it's just like, just screw that. No. I wouldn't, whatever.
Personally, but put him in tights. And it's lazy.
I've always
liked
the term mystery man
sure.
to refer to, like, the golden age characters, because yeah. they weren't necessarily vigilantes, they weren't necessarily masked, but they definitely did not fit in with the rest of society with their goals and motivations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they were mystery men.
I don't know what I would consider to be, like, what are the qualifications for a superhero? Mm-hmm. I think it's somebody who is more human, you say. Mm-hmm. Not exactly like Superman superpowers. Could be someone like Zora, who's just got exceptional ability.
Olympic level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And fights for good. Mm-hmm. That's a qualification that I would put out there.
Yeah, when you put it like that, then, like, Tarzan makes the list. Buck Rogers makes the list. Yeah. Doc Savage makes the list. I forgot the newspaper comics, Mandrake the Magician. Mm-hmm. It's like 1934. Mm-hmm.
The Phantom.
Yep, and the Phantom. And the Phantom mm-hmm. had no powers. Nope. He just duped people into thinking that he was immortal.
Yeah.
It's just he would pass on the mantle.
Right.
But somebody who takes it upon themselves to do vigilante justice or something.
Mystery Man.
Mystery Man. Yep.
Creates an aura of mystery about it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sherlock.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Preternatural. Yeah.
Has exceptional skill.
Exceptional skill. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm also rewatching the Mark Gatiss, and he's a co-creator along with who's the Doctor Who guy who created Sherlock, the BBC Sherlock? Oh, man.
Moffat.
Yeah. Stephen Moffat. Stephen Moffat, Mark Gatiss co-created the Sherlock character. Mark Gatiss also plays Sherlock's brother in it. Anyway. I'm rewatching it. It's okay. It's like 9 movies I got to catch up on. So cool. Anything else to say about the first superhero?
It could, yeah. It just depends where you want to focus on.
Yeah, it does. We got all those ideas got sort of codified and enriched, and turned into a major profit machine when Superman hit the stands at DC. And really, it does behoove one to read Men of Tomorrow, the book that Gerard Jones wrote about the history of DC Comics, because mm-hmm. it really is a great discussion of how DC established the industry, how those stories are told, and where those stories come from, and that sort of thing. So,
and not to drag this one too much longer, but I didn't even think about, like, you could count demigods as superheroes. We can go back to the beginning of...
You can go back to the mythology.
Spoken word. Yeah. Hercules, sure. All those guys. So, really, you can go back pretty far.
But, yeah. Absolutely. All right. Speaking of superheroes, because we are a podcast about comic books, there was an article came out where Stan Lee explained why comics should take a stand on social issues, and this has been coming up a lot lately, where let's say movie stars or TV stars, authors will tweet something political, or say something political, and their audience is like, stay out of politics, just stick to your job of entertaining the masses. And I think this probably happens a lot as well with comic books. Do you find that overly, not overly politicized, but like comics that have sort of a political bent or focus? Are they looked upon differently than non-political comics?
Well, I think you want to do, first of all, is ask whether we're talking about partisanship or human rights. Because I think that a lot of those things are being bypassed for partisanship. And there's a lot of things that are happening right now where, we're not talking politics. We're talking about whether someone is having the freedom to live in this country by the presets of the Constitution. If they have these certain, if they're equitable freedoms, and comic books have an opportunity to discuss equity in what I think is a pretty creative space, a pretty open space, and to say no, we're not going to do that is shameful.
Well, I don't think you should go all in or all out.
Yeah.
I think that the good thing about comics, especially now, is that we're seeing a lot of different types of comics. We're seeing a lot of different publishing houses. I find that if you go really heavy-handed in superhero stuff, it can sometimes not work very well. Mm-hmm. And then there's places like Black Mask Publishing that is politically driven as a publishing house and will take on a lot of different issues. And I think they do that very well. So I think it really comes down to depending. And it's also going to maybe not fit for everybody. And I don't think it should be force-fed for everybody all across the land, you know, of comic books. But I don't think it should ever be off the table as a conversation piece or a part of a storyline.
Yeah, I agree. I think right now we're creating tremendous opportunities for people to learn about different cultures and different belief systems and to have superhero characters that come from different walks of life is incredibly valuable right now because it's creating an opportunity for equity in society. But also, a friend of mine, there's just a reader having the opportunity to see themselves reflected in the comic book. Case in point is Black from Black Mask. A friend of mine said, this is one of the first times I see myself reflected back in a comic book, because I've been reading comic books about white people since I was a kid. This is a very exciting book for me to read.
Mm-hmm. See, I split that question into two because there's different types of approaches. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that you guys are speaking of, I feel, is stuff that like exists naturally or it should.
Yeah.
The stuff that I feel the question might have been leaning toward on one hand is like, so Stan Lee is known for bringing up drug stuff, and that you have the Green Arrow, Green Lantern stuff of the 70s, which is about drugs, overpopulation, religion, all that stuff. And what I think about is Judd Winnick in the early 2000s. That's an example of a creator jamming stuff down your throat through a genre that is kind of, I feel you're lessening your message if you're doing it through the superhero genre at times.
Can you remind me what stories you're talking about with the Judd Winnick
stuff? Judd Winnick focused a lot on HIV stuff. He focused a lot on different gay rights stuff. He kind of went around and did a little bit of everything.
What comics were they?
Everything DC.
He wrote. Okay.
Everything he wrote.
Okay.
I'm sorry. After reading through all of his stuff through like 10 years, I had to put it down because
so he got on a political hobby horse that you felt distracted from.
And
the
I don't necessarily need Batman telling me this stuff.
Okay. Yeah, and right? See that's where it is.
That's where it breaks.
The line can be.
Well, yeah.
To me, that's just
where it's force-fed
storytelling. I mean, if you've right. got something you want to, if you've got a message, you need to figure out how to sell it.
And
know?
See, there were good stuff about it because like when I speak of the HIV thing, it was that Green Arrow's new protege, the new Speedy, was HIV positive. So like that's representation. I think that's great. It's just that it got really heavy handed with like his outsider books and just got to the point where it got a little eye rolling. Like just like you're going like uber liberal throughout this. There's an independent comic I loved called Ragmop that was mostly just comedy. And then when he finally reprinted it, he added new material that was super, super political. And it's not that I didn't agree with his viewpoints. It's just that they ruined the story beats. And so there's times where people just basically want to crash a party with this stuff. Mm-hmm. And there's appropriate times for that. it's better if you kind of get it in there under a good story.
Mm-hmm.
Then it can have resonance. Then it can matter. Right. But when you come in with a sledgehammer, that you got to have the right occasion for that sledgehammer.
Is that a question? Do you feel that is a question of someone's agenda overriding their ability to tell a story, or are they just not that good at telling the stories?
Column A, column B.
Yeah.
I think it's a balance. Right. Judd Winnick can tell really great stories. Yeah. Judd Winnick can tell the horrible stories.
Okay.
And I just feel that some people get really charged at times, and mm-hmm. it's like, that's fine. But, you know, we are buying a piece of entertainment, and there are certain times where I just feel that, I'm not going to say appropriate. I just say I don't need my face shoved in it like it's poop on the carpet and I'm a dog.
Yeah.
I also kind of hear you saying that it's a question of knowing the intelligence of your audience or respecting the intelligence of your audience.
Yeah, that could be a good part of it too.
Because I'm thinking in terms of like comic books that have taught me things in the last couple of years. Comic books have taught me things about different cultures or different belief systems in the last couple of years. And I didn't realize that that's something I was craving.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel spoken down, talked down to, or had it shoved in my face. But I was also thinking about in the 80s when so many people that I knew were on their deathbeds from AIDS or had a death sentence with HIV. And I kind of felt like, well, maybe someone needs to take a sledgehammer to the message system because the message is not getting out there. So I hear what you're saying, but I guess it's, column A, column B.
Yeah, I'm very like, on, like I said, this question went two ways for me of just like, I feel like it perfectly, this stuff does have to be here. Mm-hmm. Social commentary is very important,
mm-hmm.
but it really needs a light touch at times to be the most effective. And sledgehammers are appropriate, but comic books have a very limited audience. And I think a lot of the people that are going to those books, like the Black Mass Publishing stuff, they already have that political aspect in their mind when they're picking that book up.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have to actually hunt down for a Black Mass comic. But when you're picking up a random Batman comic, sometimes you just want a Batman comic because you need to escape our current reality.
And there's been really well-finessed Superman stories that people have taken, like being an immigrant or being an outsider and mm-hmm. different things where mm-hmm. whether or not he's a strong white man or not, people have been able to pull things out of those stories and they've been really well done and they've really spoken to a large audience. And I think that that's something where...
And I feel stuff like Ms. Marvel's pretty balanced.
Yes, really and I think balanced. That is a fantastic storyline.
Should we also consider the shift that is taking place in the audience?
Millennial stuff.
The more people of color reading comic books, more women reading comics, more people from the from the LGBT community having stories directed to them, speaking to them. So there's that shift, and that's what I meant when I said equity. It's like, who are the stories for, and who are we teaching, and who are we supporting? And how these stories are told.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when I'm glad we had this conversation because when I was thinking about this question, I was thinking about it only, actually, probably solely in partisanship terms.
Uh-huh.
Thinking about, the blowback to people of note voicing their opinion, or there's like fan art that came out recently of Wonder Woman punching the president. But it... I wasn't thinking about it in terms of like you say human rights, where there's like a potential rollback of LGBT rights or the travel ban from certain mm-hmm. Predominantly Muslim countries.
Okay, so why is Wonder Woman punching that guy? Why is Wonder Woman punching that guy? What is he doing that would inspire her to punch him?
I was also thinking about. I wasn't thinking about other social issues like drug use or the stigma of HIV positive people. So, all really good stuff. And let's move on to Book Report, everybody, and shift gears.
Book Report
completely.
Oh, all right. Can we come back to that someday?
Yes. Let's please. I get the feeling that this is something that we may.
No, it's a good subject, but I think also that. We'll keep growing in the discussion.
All right. So, hey, Nicole, let's start with you. What do you want to talk about?
So I went over to our kids section and I pulled out a book that I've had on my reading list since I started working here. And it's called The Intrepid Escapegoat by Brian Smith. It is published by Third World Studios, and it is, as far as I can tell, a one-and-done story. And it follows this anthropomorphic goat. He is the escape goat, and he is like a Houdini character. He is... It starts off traveling into this pyramid where a young Isis is reborn or brought back to life, and she has magical powers. And then they go on an amazing adventure together where they are actually solving a mystery. So it is one contained story. Don't know where the period piece is. When was Houdini around? Because that would be kind of, I guess, the period piece.
1920s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so around there. He's a magician. He's like Houdini, like I said. And he's always escaping from these treacherous situations. There's, you know, magical amulets and reanimated dead bodies who are doing the bidding of evil people. There's conceited... aging actresses who may or may not be up to mischievous things. And it's an all-age story, and there's also an anthropomorphic cat lady, but then there's also humans, so it's kind of a mix of things. But it was pretty fun. It was, I think, for those, we don't have too many things that are kind of mystery involved when it comes to all age tales. And Goldie Vance is one of those things. I think this one is another good one. And it's fun. It's got good art in it, and it's a pretty quick read. And it's very enjoyable.
Cool. Yeah. The Intrepid Escapegoat. Thanks, Nicole.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cole Hornaday, what about you, sir?
Well, I read... Margaret Atwood's Angel Catbird, published by Dark Horse Books. This is actually Angel Catbird, Volume 1. One of the things I regret in life is right now is that I don't have enough time to read. And in not having enough time to read, I don't have enough time to read more books by Margaret Atwood. I've read 4 of her novels. Each one has been kind of not only inspiring, but life-changing. And I wish I could say that about this book. Atwood was clearly inspired by comic books, but comic books from maybe even the Golden Age or Silver Age, because she talks at length about comic books, but in the introduction to this book. But I don't think she's very familiar with contemporary comic book storytelling, because I was puzzled all the way through who the target audience was for this book. It's a very generic setup. There's a fellow who's a genetic engineer, and he comes up with this formula that, you know, when he manages to somehow get in contact with a bird and a cat and himself, and then he takes on these characteristics of both these animals. But he also comes across a cat subculture that's also filled with a lot of cat puns. And there's a cat vampire, and of course he's called Catula. So I'm reading this going, in a lot of terrible puns, a lot of, dare I say it, cliche storytelling. The artwork was fine. I think Johnny Christmas and Tamara Bonvalin, if I'm pronouncing her name correctly, did a great job.
Oh, but she's the colorist, I think, right?
Yes.
Bonvalin. Johnny Christmas did Sheltered, which is a really good series.
The artwork is great. It's just it was kind of a slog to read, because I found it to be kind of joyless, even though it's supposed to be this silly.
It's supposed
frolic.
To be kind of comedic, yeah, I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just so cliched that. And for a book that is $14.99 hardbound and is coming out with the regularity of not monthly but quarterly,
kind of.
I think kind of quarterly-ish.
Yeah. I couldn't tell if it was aimed at younger people or if it was aimed at people who could appreciate sort of a nostalgic thing. But every once in a while, there are very adult jokes in it, like about being in heat and things like that. And I was like, oh well, okay, maybe that's not for kids. I don't know.
Could that be for kids like the way Looney Tunes were for kids?
If there were dirty cat I'm in heat jokes in Looney Tunes.
Looney Tunes probably have a lot of adult humor.
Yeah. Okay, well, maybe. It just didn't have any appeal to me, and which was, and I was really looking forward to this book because I think that Atwood is actually just a brilliant storyteller and one of the greatest literary minds in the world. But I can't quite figure out what she was trying to do with this story. Maybe if I give the second book a chance, I would get a better feel for where she's going. But I don't think I want to read the other one. Angel Catbird.
All right, cool. Thanks, Cole. Mm-hmm. Angel Catbird. Don't check it out. All right.
No, check it out.
Chris Casso, what do you got for us this week?
The new issue of Planetoid came out. There's a new series subtitled Praxis. Planetoid originally came out when Saga came out, and that's many, 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 many moons ago.
Yep.
And let's see here. It was first published in 2012. And so it's been that long, and he hasn't come back to it. Hmm. He tried doing... the creator's name is Ken Garing. He is the artist and the writer. This is Image Comics. He tried doing other projects, and some of them worked, some of them didn't, but like some of them weren't even published. He went outside of the comic industry, so now he's back. So the original Planetoid is very, to me, akin to 80s sci-fi movies like Enemy Mine, starring Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr. Mm-hmm. And it features this wanderer who crash lands on a planet or is forced to crash on that planet. And the planet's used as a prison planet by this pretty douchey alien race. And the gravity is so hard on the planet, hardcore, that nobody can escape. So they don't even have to really worry about setting up a way for people to not escape. And it's a harsh land with mechanical monstrosities and all sorts of different aliens. And the guy comes to the planet with the only working gun, and he unites the people and stuff like that. And bad things happen. So this is to return, and it's been years after that, and it's just as good as the original series. I love his art style. It's very dirty, grimy, mechy in the right places.
His worldscapes are really, really beautiful.
Yep.
His people aren't as beautiful, but
no,
but his worldscapes are really cool.
The people are pretty basic. They're not terribly ugly for me as far as the line work or anything, but his worldscape's kind of where it's at, where his techscapes are where it's at. It's first issue, only $3.99. It's a lot of fun. I recommend going back and getting the trade paperback for the first series. So, Planetoid.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. And that is Book Report, and that is our show. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com and Comic Extension here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsengine.com. Also, check them out at Emerald City Comic Con. Do you know where the Comic Extension booth is going to be?
Oh, I don't
near
remember.
Near the restrooms.
Yeah, I don't remember our booth
all right.
number.
Walk
so
around.
Come to us eventually.
Dang
all
it. Right. Yeah.
Check them out. We'll try to find them.
We'll tweet it. How about
They'll
that?
We'll tweet it. Follow at Com Extension.
It's at twitter.com/Com Extension.
Cool.
That's where you find us.
And check us out at perfectboundpodcast.com, where you can subscribe via any way you get your podcasts. Send us an email at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And now, friends, it's get your quiz hats on. It's quiz time. This week, the questions come to us from me.
What?
And I've been rewatching Rick and Morty, so this is my Rick and Morty quiz. Wubba lubba dub dub.
Yes!
Number one. It kind of goes off the rails into the end. You'll see what I mean. Number one.
Because Rick and Morty.
Creator Justin Roiland based Rick and Morty on what 80s-era cinematic time travelers? Nicole.
Back to the Future.
Yes, Doc Brown and Marty McFly from Back to the Future. Number two, 1985's Back to the Future featured what kind of car is the time machine? Cole Hornaday?
A DeLorean.
Yes, the 1981 DeLorean DMC-12. Question number three, the DeLorean DMC-12 featured what kind of unusual door type?
You call it Batwing?
You're close.
Vertical. Butterfly wing?
No.
Dragon wing.
Heron wing.
I'll give it to you. It's called a gull wing.
Oh, I was so close, but not really.
Number four. Another car where gull wings feature prominently is Matt Tracker's 1985 Chevrolet Camaro from what cartoon/comic?
Knight Rider?
No.
Mask? I don't
know who yes, is. Mask.
Oh, my
AKA
goodness, I got it right.
Mobile Armored Strike Command.
Excellent.
And finally, number
oh.
five,
wow.
I...
Wow.
I, Ben Lawrence, had every single mask toy
no
growing
way.
Up, except for which one?
Oh,
the
dude.
Truck.
Nope. I had the semi truck.
The green motorcycle.
No, I just meant it was the answer to the previous in the
oh,
question
oh,
to the previous
oh,
one.
Oh. Oh. The Gullwing Door.
The Gullwing Door. It's Matt Trekker's 1985
Matt
Chevrolet
Trekker's.
Camaro. All right. Well, that is quiz
this
time.
Is great.
Thank you all.
Marvelous.
Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.